Good to have you with us, sir. We appreciate you joining us. Now, Senator, first question right off the bat here is, were you shocked by Donald Trump's win over Hillary Clinton last month?
I was pretty surprised. I think pretty much everyone was. I know I was on Election Day not only calling some Democratic senators, but calling a lot of my Republican friends, and as the evening wore on and it became evident that Mr. Trump was going to be successful, there was quite a bit of surprise from both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Now, what does it say, Senator Warner, about the voters? I believe you had some comments after the election about what the Democrats need to do.
Well, I think, first of all, I think obviously the Democrats can't just be a party on the East Coast and West Coast and certain metropolitan areas. I mean, ever since I was governor, I felt that, frankly, neither political party has done very much for rural America, rural Virginia. One of the reasons why, when I was governor, I was proud of the fact we put in broadband all across Southside. My best day as governor was bringing about 600 high-tech jobs down to Russell County. And I think there was a feeling that in rural America in particular, smaller town America, that people in Washington weren't listening. But I also have to tell you that I think that the Trump election was a repudiation not just of the Democrats. I think it was a repudiation of Republicans. I think it was a repudiation of traditional media and big business. The American public pretty fed up with the lack of action getting done in Washington and a lot of concerns about globalization, trade, technology. You know, I was a business guy longer than I've been in politics, and I believe strongly in our free enterprise system, but I don't think modern American capitalism in its current form is working for enough people. When we see companies time and again only chase short-term quarterly profits, they don't make long-term value investing anymore. A third of the workforce has got kind of no kind of social insurance because they're either working part-time or they're independent contractors. I'd like to make sure capitalism could work for a broader group of people. And I think that was part of the message that came out of this election.
Senator, this is Gene Morano. Good morning.
Hey, Gene.
I'm just curious, and I'm sure you've talked to him, but how difficult do you think it's been for Senator Tim Kaine to kind of pivot back to the Senate after the vice presidential run? I know he's already been out there asking for a vote on the war again and, you know, defending the Affordable Care Act, which he's going to do today also. But is that a difficult transition back? Do you think he's sort of jumped right in?
Well, listen, Tim is relentlessly optimistic. He and I have been friends since we went to law school together. You know, I've known him for 36 years. I think it was America's loss that he didn't become vice president. On a personal basis, it was my gain because he's a great partner in the Senate. And I think, you know, I think he's generally making the transition. I think there are times it's tough. I think he was fairly confident that he was going to get a new job come January. I think they prepared their life for that. You know, there's nobody more resilient than Tim Kaine, and he'll be back fighting for Virginia. And I think, you know, he said quite clearly that, you know, he's had his time at the national level, and he'd like to be a long-term senator for Virginia.
We're talking with U.S. Senator Mark Warner. I'm Gene Morano, along with Joey Self. Senator, how concerned are you looking forward about social programs and environmental protection regulations being rolled back by the Trump administration? Or do you do you also think that the president-elect is going to have to realize he has to work with Congress?
Yes. I mean, I remember when I became governor, I'd never been elected to anything. And I, you know, and I was proud of my business career. And, you know, proud of the fact when I was governor of Virginia, I was named the best-managed state. So there are ways you can bring business principles. But there's a lot of things that don't necessarily translate. When you invest in a early childhood education, your later return on that, it may be 30 years before you find out whether that was a good investment or not. So I think there will be times, and I know, again, when I was governor, it took me about 6 months just to figure out exactly what all the agencies did, and that's tiny compared to the federal government. So I think we all, like him or dislike him, the president-elect's got a lot of self-confidence, and but I hope he's got enough humility to realize that this is a job that's bigger than anyone, and you can't just dictate policy by tweets in the morning. You're going to have to work with Congress on the social program. You know, frankly, he was probably further out than I've been. I've been willing to look at some of the reforms on our entitlement programs to make sure that they're going to be around for our grandkids, because I'm so concerned about our national debt. He actually said he wasn't going to touch any of those. So we will see how, if he is true to that or not. In terms of the other point, I'm sorry.
Environmental regulations, kind of climate control.
I think we've made huge progress in protecting our environment. And I think about Roanoke, I think about Southwest Virginia, I think about the amount of far Southwest, for example, at the breaks and some of the areas we've got out in Southwest Virginia, how important tourism is. I don't think anybody wants to have that rolled back. I do think there are areas on both the environment and across government where, if done correctly, we can find ways to be smarter about regulation. I had legislation a few years back that said when we add a regulation, at least for some time, we ought to go out and see if we could eliminate a regulation at the same time. Because one of the things about the regulatory nature is that we're always additive. No one ever goes out and tries to take things away. And there are, just as in any business or in any operation, there are regulations or rules that outlive their use. So some looking at streamlining, I think, makes sense. I don't think, for example, when we're talking about major infrastructure projects, it shouldn't take us 5, 6, 7 years to go through an environmental review process and all the regulatory process to be able to build a project. That oftentimes, you know, will double or triple the cost of the project. So, you know, I'm open to some, you know, tailored regulatory review. I'm not open to widespread rolling back of environmental rules.
Talking with U.S. Senator Mark Warner, you're now vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Congratulations. What do we need to do, Senator, in terms of cybersecurity, you know, keeping hackers out of emails, possibly influencing elections? Do we not have the right people that are in charge of these programs, or do we need to hire, you know, younger kids or what? What do we do to
First of all, you know, there's 200,000 unfilled cyber jobs in America today. There's about 18,000 in Virginia. I would say to anybody in the listening audience, young person, not so young person, you know, you don't even need a graduate degree. You can get into the cyber field with an associate's degree. We've got 10 centers of excellence already in Virginia. My goal, and working with the governors, to make sure every college and community college is trained in cyber. So number one, we need more folks in the workforce. Number two, this, I think if the American public realize how vulnerable we are in cybersecurity, you know, our adversaries, and some of these are criminals, some of these are nation states, you know, are ripping off about $400 billion worth of our intellectual property on an annual basis. Think about that. They don't have to spend that much money researching. They can break in, steal corporate or government intellectual property and use it. And this is only a problem that's going to get worse. Let me just give you one example. Some of your listeners may have heard there was a few weeks back, there was something called a denial of service, where they shut down one of these internet service providers, Dyn, and people couldn't access websites. That was done by connecting a lot of, in effect, dumb devices in what's called a botnet. And that's because we have right now 10 billion devices that are connected, and this means things like your cars, this may mean your security camera, ultimately it'll mean your refrigerator, because your refrigerator's going to, you know, know when you've run out of milk and will send a signal. Well, that 10 billion devices is going to go to 34 billion devices by 2020. That's only 4 years away. And you know, none of these devices are built with any kind of security concerns in them. So, you know, this issue, unfortunately, and whether we're talking about on a government standpoint or whether we're talking about on a personal information standpoint, we're talking about a corporate standpoint, we're going to need kind of a not just whole of government, whole of society approach. But there are huge vulnerabilities. And one of the things that I've been disappointed in, and I want to make sure we get to the bottom of, is that there was not more outrage over what the intelligence community, and they've made this public, has said about Russian interference in this election in terms of hacking, selective leaking of emails. You know, this is not going to change the election. I'm not a sore loser here. This is just saying the American people ought to know that there was interference in our election, that there was fake news spread by some of these fake sites, many of them funded by outside foreign interests, so that people can be on guard going forward. And, you know, we've seen it here. There are important elections in Europe coming up. These Russian aggressive measures, I think, have to be countered.